Bill and Jim had been much too occupied to notice the black dogs streaming out of the van and out of the dark garage into the mews. Snow had been falling for hours, so that London was all white. The pups had scarcely noticed the snow while they were running away from Cruella's car. Now they at once fell in love with this beautiful, feathery stuff. It raised their spirits wonderfully, and they felt well rested after their sleep in the van. They were still hungry, but they didn't mind that much because they were expecting a wonderful supper. Hearing them counting on this, poor Mrs. felt more anxious than ever. Bill, Jim, and the Staffordshire had gone out of the garage by another way, so Pongo let the pups play in the snowy mews for a few minutes. Then Mrs. persuaded the cad pig to get back into her cart, and off they went. Because of the snow, there were very few people about, which was just as well, as the army of black dogs was now very noticeable against the white streets. The only person who saw them was an elderly gentleman on his way to a late party. He rubbed his eyes, then shook his head, and murmured, "And I haven't even begun Christmas yet." It took only a few minutes to reach the outer circle. How beautiful Regent's Park looked, snowy under the stars. Pongo said, "Missus, do you remember what I told you when we said goodbye to the park?" Missus answered, "You told me to think of the day when we would come back with 15 puppies running behind us. And now we have 97. They had not come back to the outer circle by the way they had left it, but were at the other side of the park, close to Cruella de Vil's house. As they drew near to it, Pongo saw that every window was dark, so he thought it would be safe to call a moment's halt. "Look, pups," he told them, "that is our enemy's house." Lucky said, "May we scratch it and bite it?" "You would only hurt your nails and your teeth," said Pongo, looking up at the huge house. Mrs. was looking down into the area. Something moved there, something only a little less white than the snow. It was Cruella's Persian cat. Her back was arched, and she was spitting angrily. Pongo said quickly, "Madam, none of us would ever dream of hurting you." The white cat said, "That's the civilest speech I ever had from a dog. Who are you? There are no black dogs round here." "We are not usually black, except for our spots," said Pongo. "We once visited your house." He got no further, because the white cat guessed everything, as well she might, after all the talk she'd heard between Mr. and Mrs. Deville. "And you've rescued all the pups from Hell Hall? Well, bravo, bravo, I couldn't be more pleased." Then Mrs. remembered what Cruella de Vil had said on the night when the puppies were born, and she spoke to the white cat very kindly, saying, "I might have known you would sympathize, for I once heard you lost many kittens in early infancy." 44 to the present date," said the white cat, "all drowned by the fiend I live with." "Why don't you leave her?" asked Pongo. "I bide my time," said the white cat. "I wait for my full revenge. I can't do much on my own. I've only 2 pairs of paws. But I scare the servants away. Any cat can make a house seem haunted. I let the place become overrun with mice, and oh, how I scratch the furniture. Though it's heartbreaking how little she notices it. She's such a rotten housewife. Why not let your pups come in and do some damage now?"
"Oh, please, please let us,"
clamoured all the pups. Pongo shook his head. "Cruella will be back. I'm surprised she's not home already."
"Oh, she's been back," said the white cat, "and gone out to dinner. She had to because I scared another batch of servants away this morning as a little Christmas present for her. Do come in."
"No, no, Pongo," cried Mrs. "This is no moment for revenge. We should get the pups home. They're hungry."
But the pups clamoured louder than ever.
"Please, please, please let us damage Cruella's house."
They made so much noise that Mrs. could not hear what the white cat was now saying to Pongo. At last he turned, quietened the pups, and said, "Mrs., I now feel that we should do as our friend here suggests. It would take me a long time to explain why, so will you trust me, please?"
"Of course, Pongo,"
said Mrs. loyally.
And if you're sure we really ought to be revenged on Cruella, well, naturally, I shall enjoy it.
Then follow me, said the White Cat. There's a way in at the back.
Lucky and two big, loud-barked pups were left on guard. They were sorry to miss the fun, but duty was duty. Three barks if you sight the striped car or hear its horn, Pongo told them, then marched all the other pups after the White Cat. The little blue cart was left in the mews at the back of the house. The Cadpig insisted on going into the house and getting her fair share of the revenge. The White Cat took them in through the coal cellar.
Nothing down here worth wrecking, she said, making for the stairs.
Up through the dark house they went, until she paused outside a bolted door.
Now, if you really can undo that bolt, she said to Pongo. Goodness knows I've tried often enough.
Oh, he's splendid at bolts, said Mrs. proudly. It was a nice chromium bolt, well oiled. It gave Pongo no trouble at all. There was enough light from the lamps on the outer circle to show them a big room in which were many racks of fur coats. Why, Cruella must own dozens of them, thought Mrs. And there were many fur stoles, muffs, etc., too. Pongo barked his orders. Four pups to a coat, two pups to a stole, one pup to a muff. Present teeth. Tear!
There was not space enough in one room to finish the whole job, so the pups spread themselves throughout the house. After that, the fur flew with a vengeance in every direction. Chinchilla, sable, mink and beaver, nutria, fox, Kolinsky, and many humbler skins. From kitchen to attic, the house was filled with a fog of fur. And the White Cat did not forget the ermine sheets. She did good work on those herself, moving so fast that it was hard to see which was clawed white ermine and which was clawing White Cat.
I've been slack, she said. I could have got at these years ago.
One needs company for a job like this, said Pongo.
No more furs to tear now,
said the Cadpig sadly. She had just shredded a little sable tippet all by herself.
Quiet! Barked Pongo suddenly. Had his ears deceived him? No, there it was again, a distant blast from the loudest motor horn in England. The next instant, the pups outside barked the alarm.
Down to the coal cellar, barked Pongo.
There was a wild scurry of pups down the dark stairs. The White Cat sprang to a window.
You'll have time, she cried. The car's only just turned into the outer circle.
But Pongo knew how fast that car could come, and pups were falling over each other in the darkness. There were bumps and yelps. Roly-Poly fell through the banisters. It was amazing that he was not hurt. But at last, they were all streaming out of the coal cellar into the mews.
In your places for counting, barked Pongo.
He had long ago invented a quick way of counting the army. Pups formed 9 rows of 10 and 1 row of 7, which included the Cadpig in her cart. Swiftly, he counted now. 93, 94. There were 3 pups missing.
They must be somewhere in the house, cried Mrs. We must rescue them.
Pongo dashed towards the coal cellar, then stopped, gasping with relief. Lucky and the 2 loud-barked pups were just coming from the front of the house. Pongo had forgotten them in his counting. The army was complete.
Cruella's nearly here, said Lucky.
We must make sure she's gone indoors before we march on, said Pongo,
and he ran into the narrow passage that led to the outer circle. Mrs. ran after him.
Be careful, Pongo, she'll see you.
Not in this dark passage, said Pongo.
The striped car went by the end of the passage. A light was on inside, and they could see Cruella clearly.
Oh, Pongo! Wailed Mrs. She's still got her absolutely simple white mink cloak.
Pongo ran on towards the outer circle, and Mrs. ran after him. Cautiously, they peered out of the passage and saw the striped car stop in front of the DeVille's house. Mr. DeVille, who'd been driving, helped Cruella out and then went up the front door steps. He started to search for his latch key. Cruella stood waiting, with the cloak hanging loosely round her shoulders.
I shan't sleep if she keeps that cloak, said Mrs. And you need your sleep, Mrs., said Pongo.
The same idea had come to both of them. The cloak hung so loosely, so temptingly, and the relief of getting the pups safely out of the house had made them feel daring. Pongo was happy to see his dear wife looking as mischievous as a puppy.
"She'll never recognize us now we're black," he said. "Let's risk it. Now!"
They dashed towards Cruella and seized the hem of the cloak. It slipped from her shoulders quite easily and fell on top of Pongo and Mrs. Blindly, they hurled themselves along the outer circle with the cloak spread out over them and looking as if it was running by itself. Cruella screamed, "It's bewitched! Go after it, quick!"
"No fear," said Mr. Deville. "I think an ancestor of yours is running away with it. You better come indoors."
The next moment, he and Cruella started to cough violently, for as they opened the front door, they were met by a choking cloud of fur. Somehow, Pongo and Mrs. found their way to the passage, where they came from under the cloak and dragged it to the mews. Here the pups fell on it, and that was the end of the absolutely simple white mink cloak. Lights were now flashing on all over the Deville's house, and Cruella could be heard shrieking with rage. "This is where we march home quickly," said Pongo. Suddenly, all her high spirits deserted Mrs. Home! But would they be allowed into their home? All her fears came back. Now they were marching along the outer circle again. And now they could see the Dearly's house ahead of them. There were lights in the drawing-room window. "Mr. and Mrs. Dearly haven't gone to bed yet," said Pongo. Lights were shining up from the kitchen. "The nannies are still awake," said Mrs. She said it brightly. No one could have guessed how frightened she was, though her heart was thumping so hard that she was afraid Pongo would hear it. Why should the Dearlys let a mob of strange black dogs into the house? And unless they did get in, how could they show the Dearlys they were not strange black dogs? Barking would not help. She and Pongo would need to get close to their pets, close enough to put their sooty heads against the Dearly's knees, or their sooty paws around the Dearly's necks. Suppose they were all turned away, 99 hungry Dalmatians, outcasts in the night. At that moment, snow began to fall again, very, very thickly. The Dearlys, the nannies, and Perdita had spent a sad Christmas Eve. They had all been very kind to each other. Perdita had washed the humans so much that they all had chapped hands and had to use gallons of hand lotion. Fortunately, Perdita quite liked the taste of this. She had received no news by way of the twilight barking. Reception was bad in that part of Regent's Park, which was why Pongo had done his barking and listening from Primrose Hill. In the afternoon, the nannies trimmed the Christmas tree. They said it was for Perdita, but they really hoped to cheer the Dearlys up. The Dearlys put Perdita's presents on it, but they had not the heart to get out the presents which they had bought for Pongo, Mrs. and 15 puppies, just in case they all came home. Mr. Dearly had guessed that Pongo and Mrs. were searching for their family, but now he feared that family might be scattered all over England, and the best he really hoped for was that Pongo and Mrs. might return. When snow first began to fall, everyone felt worse than ever, and Mrs. didn't even take her coat, said Mrs. Dearly. She pictured Pongo and Mrs. lost, shivering, and starving. So did Mr. Dearly, but they kept the horrid thought to themselves. In the evening, the Dearlys invited the nannies to come up to the drawing-room, and they all played nursery card games, Snap, Beggar My Neighbour, and Animal Grab. They all pretended to enjoy themselves, which was very hard work. At last, Mr. Dearly said he would put some Christmas carols on the gramophone. Now, carols are always beautiful, but if you are sad, they can make you feel sadder. There are some people who always find beauty makes them feel sadder, which is a very mysterious thing. Soon, the Dearlys and the nannies could hardly keep the tears out of their eyes. When Mr. Dearly realized this, he thought, "This must be the last carol we play." It was Silent Night. Mrs. Dearly put out the lights and drew back the curtains at the tall windows so that they could see the stars while they listened. And she saw it was snowing again. She went back to the sofa and stroked Perdita, who for once did no washing, but just gazed at the falling snowflakes. The voices singing Silent Night were high and clear and peaceful and not very loud. Suddenly, everyone in the room heard a dog bark.
"That's Pongo," cried Mr. Dearly, and dashed to a window. "That's Mrs.," cried Mrs. Dearly, hearing a different bark as she too dashed to the window. They flung the window open wide and stared down through the swirling snow. And then their hearts seemed turned to lead by disappointment. Down below were two black dogs. Mrs. Dearly said gently, "You shouldn't be out on a night like this. Go home to your owners, my dears." She used the word owners when she should have said pets, that mistake humans so often make. The dogs barked again, but Mr. Dearly said, "Home," very firmly, for he felt sure the dogs lived somewhere near and had been let out for a last run before going to bed. He shut the window, saying to Mrs. Dearly, "Odd-looking dogs. I can't quite recognize the breed." He did not hear the despairing howl that came from Mrs. It had happened just as she had feared. They were turned away, outcasts in the night. Pongo had a moment of panic. This was something he had not foreseen, but quickly he pulled himself together. "We must bark again," he said, "and much louder." "Shall the puppies bark too?" suggested Mrs. The puppies were all lined up out of sight from the window, because Pongo felt that so many dogs at once might come as a bit of a shock. He now said, "No, only you and I must bark, Mrs., and one at a time. Then they will recognize our voices sooner or later. We would recognize theirs, whatever clothes they wore, whatever color their faces and hands were." So he barked again, and then Mrs. barked. They went on and on, taking it in turns. Up in the drawing room, Mrs. Dearly said, "I can't believe that's not Pongo and Mrs., and look how excited Perdita is."
"It's because we're all so longing to hear them," said Mr. Dearly. "We imagine we do. But there must be something wrong with those black dogs. Just listen to them. Perhaps they're lost." And again he opened the window. Pongo and Mrs. barked louder than ever and wagged their tails wildly. "Anyone would think they knew us," said Mr. Dearly. "I shall go down and see if they have collars on. Perhaps I can take them to their homes."
Pongo heard this and said to Mrs. quickly, "The moment the door opens, dash in and lead the way up to the drawing room. Pups, you follow Mrs. noses to tails. I will bring up the rear. And never let there be one moment when Mr. Dearly can close the front door. Once we are in, we can make them understand." The front door opened, and out came Mr. Dearly. In shot Mrs., closely followed by the cat pig, now out of her cart, and all her brothers and sisters except Lucky, who insisted on waiting with Pongo. What with the darkness and the whirling snow, Mr. Dearly did not see what was happening until a pup bumped into him in passing. It was Roly-Poly, of course. Then he looked down to see what had bumped him, and saw a steady stream of black pups going through the front door and the white hall and up the white stairs. "I'm dreaming this," thought Mr. Dearly, and pinched himself hard. But the stream of pups went on and on. Suddenly, there was a hitch. The two pups, faithfully dragging the cad pig's little blue cart, now empty, could not get it up the steps. Mr. Dearly, who could never see a dog in difficulty without helping, at once picked the cart up himself. After seeing the cart, he no longer felt he was dreaming. "These dogs are a troop from a circus," he thought. "But why have they come to us?" A moment later, Pongo and Lucky went past, and the stream of dogs stopped. Mr. Dearly called into the night, "Any more out there?" To his relief, no dog answered, so he went in and closed the door. Pongo's sooty hindquarters were just rounding the bend of the stairs. Mr. Dearly followed four steps at a time, still carrying the little blue cart. The scene in the front drawing room was rather confused. Large as the room was, there was not floor space for all the puppies, so they were jumping onto tables and chairs and piling up on top of each other. There was rather a lot of noise. Mrs. Dearly was just managing to keep on her feet. She'd never been frightened of any dog in her life, but she did feel a trifle startled. The nannies had taken refuge on top of the grand piano. Mr. Dearly took one look through the door, then dashed into the back drawing room and flung open the double doors. A sea of pups surged in. And now that there was a little spare floor space, Pongo barked a command. "All pups who can find space, roll! Roll, missus!" And he himself rolled with a will. The Dearleys stared in utter bewilderment. And then both of them shouted, "Look!" The white carpet was becoming blacker, the black dogs were becoming whiter.
"It's Pongo!" cried Mr. Dearley.
"It's Mrs.," cried Mrs. Dearley.
"It's Pongo, Mrs., and all their puppies!" cried the nannies from the top of the piano.
"It's considerably more than all their puppies," said Mr. Dearley, just before Pongo forcibly embraced him.
Mrs. was embracing Mrs. Dearley, and in a corner of the room there was a great deal more embracing. Perdita was going absolutely wild, trying to embrace 8 puppies at once. They were her own long-lost family. It had never struck Pongo that they might be among the rescued pups. He had not even noticed their brown spots, because he had scarcely seen any of the pups by daylight before they all rolled in the soot. It turned out that Perdita's family was the one that fitted the Cad Pig's little blue cart so well and had pulled it so faithfully. Mr. Dearley had put the cart down in the back drawing-room, and the nannies had now got off the piano and gone to look at it.
"That's a child's toy," said Nanny Cook.
"And it's got a name and address on it," said Nanny Butler. And she read out, "Master Tommy Tompkins, Farmer, Dimpling, Suffolk."
"Dimpling?" said Mrs. Dearley. "That's where Cruella de Vil has a country house. She told us about it when we had dinner with her, and asked if we'd like to buy it."
And then Mr. Dearley saw it all. He remembered Cruella's desire for a Dalmatian fur coat, guessed that she'd collected all these pups so that Mr. Deville could make many such coats.
"You must have the law on her," cried both nannies together.
Mr. Dearley said he would think about that after Christmas, but now he must think about feeding the pups when all the shops were closed. He hurriedly telephoned the Ritz, the Savoy, Claridge's, and other rather good hotels, and asked them to send page boys along with steaks. The hotels were most anxious to help when they heard that the missing Dalmatians had come home.
"And at least 6 dozen more than I ever hoped for," said Mr. Dearley,
not that he'd had time to count the pups.
Nanny Butler said, "They must be bathed before they eat."
"Bathed?" gasped Mrs. Dearley.
"All of them?"
"They can't sleep in their soot," said Nanny Cook firmly. "Nanny Butler and I will work in our bathroom, and you two can work in yours.
And how about asking that splendid vet and his wife to pop round and bath pups in the laundry?"
So Mr. Dearley rang up the splendid vet, who was delighted to be woken up and called out at nearly midnight on Christmas Eve. He and his wife arrived in a few minutes. Mrs. Dearley got out all her best bath salts and bath oils, and all the lovely coloured bath towels given to her as wedding presents. The nannies lit fires in every room. Then the 3 bathing teams got to work. Soon the house was filled with steam, and the scent of lilac, roses and jasmine mixed with the delightful smell of wet dogs. It took less time than you would believe, because 5 pups were put in a bath at a time. They were then wrapped in pink, blue, yellow and green towels and carried to blazing fires to dry. Mr. Dearley thoughtfully turned the drawing-room carpet over so that the soot on it would not come off on the clean pups. By the time the last pup was washed, the steaks were arriving. There were enough for everyone, even the humans, who were by this time pretty hungry. They had theirs cooked. At last, the splendid vet and his wife went home, and the house settled for the night. Pongo and Mrs. showed plainly that they wanted to sleep in their own baskets, with their puppies round them on the hearthrug and in armchairs. Perdita took her little lot into the laundry on a rather good satin eiderdown. The other pups slept all over the house, on beds, sofas and chairs. The Dearleys and the nannies managed to keep chairs for themselves, rather hard ones, but they did not mind because they didn't expect to sleep much. They wanted to be on hand in case any pup needed anything in the night. When all was quiet in the firelit kitchen, and their 15 pups were asleep, Pongo said to Mrs., "Do you remember that night we left? How we looked back at this kitchen? Look now at your legal collar on its peg, ready for you to wear tomorrow, and your beautiful blue coat." Mrs. said, "I'm so hardy now that I shall not need the coat. But I shall wear it from vanity. At that moment, they heard a little noise at the window, a little scratching noise. Outside, in the midst of a white blur, were two green eyes. It was Cruella's white cat. Swiftly, Pongo let her in.
"Such goings on at the Devilles," she said.
Quickly, Pongo turned to his wife. "I haven't explained to you yet, Missus. Our friend here told me that if we could get into that bolted room, we could destroy Mr. Deville's whole stock of furs. Cruella made him keep them all there so that she could wear any she fancied. I hoped we might put an end to his furrier's business. That was why I took the risk of going into the Deville's house, not to be revenged, but to make England safe for Dalmatians."
"And it's even better than I hoped," said the White Cat, "because it turns out most of the furs weren't paid for. So Mr. Deville's ruined."
"The poor little man," said Missus. "I feel quite sorry for him."
"No need to," said the White Cat. "He's as bad as Cruella. The only difference is she's strong and bad, and he's weak and bad. Anyway, they're going to leave England tomorrow to get away from their debts."
"Cruella still has her jewels," said Missus, regretfully.
"Mostly sham," said the White Cat. "And those that aren't will be needed by Mr. Deville to start another business abroad. He says he's going to make plastic raincoats."
"Cruella won't look very well in those," said Missus, cheerfully.
"She won't look very well in anything," said the Cat. "You've heard of people's hair going white in a single night from shock? That's happened to the black side of her hair. And the white side's gone green, a horrid shade. People are going to think it's dyed. Well, I'm glad to have finished with the Devilles."
"But where will you go?" asked Pongo. The White Cat looked surprised.
"Go? I shan't go anywhere. I've just come here. I'd have come long ago if you dogs hadn't barked that night your pets gave me a kind sardine. They won't turn me out. I'll pop up and find them now."
Then Pongo and Missus sank into a blissful sleep, without a care in the world, except that they did want to know what the Dearleys were going to do with so very many puppies. And so did the Dearleys. Those of you who also want to know should continue listening. Besides, there is a mystery to be cleared up. Most people who are good at arithmetic are likely to think there is a mistake in this story. It is called The 101 Dalmatians. Well, Pongo and Mrs. and Perdita make 3. There were 97 Dalmatian pups at Hell Hall, including those belonging to Pongo, Mrs. and Perdita. 3 and 97 make 100. Where, then, is the 101th Dalmatian? He has been mentioned, but many of you may not remember him. Those who do not shall soon be reminded of him, and those who do shall soon learn more about him. On to the last chapter, if you please. Christmas Day at the house in Regent's Park was absolutely wonderful. The rather good hotels sent plenty more steaks, and though there were not, of course, enough presents to go round, the pups were able to play with lots of things in the house which were not intended to be played with, but were played with ever afterwards. The Dearleys took all the pups into the snowy park, Pongo, Mrs. and Perdita circling round to make sure none got lost. And at twilight, Pongo and Mrs. firmly led the Dearleys up to the top of Primrose Hill and barked over a dogdom-wide network. They even managed to get a message through to the gallant old spaniel, for 2 dogs from a village 5 miles from him made a special trip in order to bark to him. He sent back a message that he and his dear old pet were very well. And, of course, the dogdom-wide barking was relayed. The furthest away dog Pongo and Mrs. spoke to direct was the Brigadier General Great Dane over towards Hampstead, who was in great barking form. "There's something very mysterious about this barking at twilight," said Mrs. Dearley. "Do you think they're sending messages?" Mr. Dearley said it was a charming idea, but... And then he stopped. Was anything beyond dogs? Not when he thought of all Pongo and Mrs. had done. How had they got 97 pups back from Suffolk? Pongo and Mrs. longed to tell him, but they never could. As soon as Christmas was over, Mr. Dearly decided to act quickly, for he realized that 100 Dalmatians was too much for one house in Regent's Park. It was even a bit much for Regent's Park. First, he advertised, in case any of the rightful owners of pups wanted to claim them. But none did, for this reason. Cruella had bought all the pups, except those stolen from the Dearlys, because it costs a lot to get any expert stealing done these days. Cruella had paid more to the dog thieves who stole from the Dearlys than for any litter she had bought. And naturally, people who had sold puppies never thought of them as lost, or did anything more about them. Only one owner turned up, the farmer who had owned Perdita, and he was quite happy to sell her to the Dearlys. So there was Mr. Dearly, lucky man, with 100 delightful Dalmatians. He decided he must take a large country house. Happily, he could afford this, as the government had again got itself into debt, and he had again got it out. And this time, he had been rewarded by an income to save his income tax on. So he had retired from business, except for being always ready to help the government with its sums. One fine day in January, when the snow was all gone, he said to Mrs. Dearly, "Let's drive out to Suffolk and return the little blue cart to Master Tommy Tompkins, and also hunt for a country house. And we'll have a look at the house where the puppies were imprisoned. Not that we'll take that one." Mrs. Dearly laughed at such an idea. They took Pongo and Mrs. with them, and Lucky came as a stowaway under a seat, because he wanted to see the sheepdog again and be made a captain. He didn't stay under the seat long, and everyone was delighted to see him when he came out. When they reached Dimpling, they went for a walk round the village and met Tommy Tompkins out with the sheepdog. So the little blue cart was returned then and there, rather a relief to the Dearlys, who wouldn't quite have known what to say to Tommy's parents. They didn't have to say anything to Tommy, as he still wasn't quite talking, though his chuckling noises were at last beginning to sound more like human than like dog. The Dearlys saw at once that Pongo, Mrs. and Lucky knew the sheepdog, and the tabby cat that came hurrying up. "And now we'll find Cruella's house," said Mr. Dearly. When they got to Hell Hall, there was a large notice outside saying, "For sale, cheap, owner gone to warm climate." And the gates stood wide open. The house was empty. The Baden brothers were now in jail for assaulting the man who came to take away the television, which had never been paid for. They weren't minding jail much, because meeting so many criminals was almost better than television, and they now had high hopes of one day appearing on What's My Crime. "What a hideous house," said Mrs. Dearly.
"What a lovely wall," said Mr. Dearly.
One thing had been worrying him. If he took 100 Dalmatians into the country, how was he to prevent them from running wild? This magnificent wall was just the thing. If only the house were not so hideous. "Suppose it was painted white," he said, "and the blocked-up windows were put back. There's a lovely pond in front, almost a lake." Mrs. Dearly shook her head. But when they got into the house and saw the fine large rooms and imagined them all white instead of red, she began to feel differently. Pongo, Mrs. and Lucky raced through the kitchen and larder, remembering all that had happened there. The Dearlys followed them and saw the furnace for the central heating. Then they all went out to the stables.
"These would make fine kennels if they were heated," said Mr. Dearly.
Then he looked up and saw the folly, and both he and Mrs. Dearly took a fancy to it, and they decided then and there to buy Hell Hall and make it into a beautiful house. "Here we will found a dynasty of Dalmatians," said Mr. Dearly. Mrs. was insulted. She thought the word meant a nasty din, but Pongo explained that it meant a family that goes on and on. Mr. Dearly added, "And we'd better start a dynasty of Dearlys to look after the dynasty of Dalmatians." And Mrs. Dearly quite agreed. The alterations to Hell Hall were quickly made, and one sunny day in early spring,
A removal van and an extra-large double-decker motor coach stood outside the house in Regent's Park. The van was for the furniture. The coach was for the Dearleys and the Dalmatians. The nannies had already gone down by car to open Hell Hall, Nanny Butler driving. She had added a smart chauffeur's cap to her butler's outfit. Mr. Dearley came out of the house with Pongo and Mrs. Mrs. Dearley followed with Perdita and with the white cat on her shoulder. The white cat, too, was to start a dynasty at Hell Hall. The Dearleys had promised her a white Persian husband. Within the next few minutes, two surprising things had happened. First, just as Mrs. saw the removal van and said, "Oh, there's a miracle," a Staffordshire Terrier flung itself from the van, said, "Here we go again," to Pongo and Mrs., and hurled itself at Mr. Dearley's chest. "That's a compliment if you only knew it," said Jim, who was standing by the van.
"That's right," said Bill. "Old battering ram's fallen for you."
"And I for him," said Mr. Dearley politely, rising from a sitting position. Pongo and Mrs. managed to quieten the Staffordshire before he paid any compliments to Mrs. Dearley. And then the second surprising thing happened. A large car had drawn up, and the people in it were looking at Pongo, Mrs. and Perdita with interest. Suddenly there was a wild commotion in the car, and then the door burst open, and out sprang a superb liver-spotted Dalmatian. He dashed up to Perdita. It was her long-lost husband. His name was Prince. The people in the big car were much touched by his faithfulness to Perdita, and at once offered him to the Dearleys, saying they would be glad of a good home for him, as they were always going abroad and having to leave him in kennels. Prince was delighted. Apart from wanting to be with Perdita, he knew good pets when he saw them. So the Dalmatians started for Suffolk, 101 strong. They all sat up on the motor coach seats looking out of the window, and many people who saw them pass cheered, for there had been so much about them in the papers that they were now quite famous. And many, many dogs lined the route, as word of the journey had gone out by twilight barking. The waiting dogs barked their good wishes, and the Dalmatians barked their thanks, so it was rather noisy in the motor coach. The Dearleys didn't mind. They thought happy barking was a pleasant noise. Prince was rather shy at first, so Mr. Dearley sat beside him and punched him in a way some big dogs like to be punched. The punching needs to be hard enough, but not too hard. It must please, not hurt. Mr. Dearley was a highly skilled dog puncher. Prince thumped his tail, then suddenly gave Mr. Dearley's ear a playful nip, which was much appreciated. After that, Perdita's handsome husband felt he was completely one of the family. When the Dalmatians reached the village of Dimpling, all the villagers were out to receive them, with the sheepdog, the tabby cat, and Tommy Tompkins well to the fore. The cows were lowing a loving welcome from the farm. Tommy had his little blue cart with him, and the cad pig felt just a bit envious, but she was happy to know she had grown too strong to need any cart. The white Persian cat, who was now a charming creature, kindness makes kind cats, was extremely gracious to the farmyard tabby. It was the beginning of a firm friendship. At last, the motor coach drove in through the wide-open gates of Hell Hall. The pond now reflected a snow-white house with muslin curtains at all the windows. The front of the house still seemed like a face and had an expression, but now it was a pleasant expression. The nannies were waiting at the open front door. As they came to meet the Dearleys, Nanny Butler said, "Do you know there's a television aerial on the roof of this house?" And Nanny Cook said, "Seems wasteful not to make use of it." Then Mr. Dearley knew that the nannies wished for television in the kitchen, and he at once suggested it. Pongo and Mrs. were delighted, for they knew how very much their smallest daughter had missed it. But during the many happy hours the cad pig was to sit watching it in the warm kitchen, she never liked it quite so much as that other television. That still, silent television she had seen on Christmas Eve, when the puppies had rested so peacefully
in the strange, lofty building. She often remembered that building and wondered who owned it. Someone very kind, she was sure, for in front of every one of the many seats, there had been a little carpet-eared, puppy-sized dog bed.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The 101 Dalmatians by Dodie Smith, read for you by Martin Jarvis. This programme was a Jarvis and Ayres production for CSA Teletapes, produced by Clive Stanhope. The executive producer was Jacob Bronstein. Text, copyright 1984, by Dodie Smith. Production copyright 2001, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.